Well, all right, again, welcome back to the Active Self-Protection Podcast. I am once again your host, Mike Williver, and I remain your favorite former Fed. With us today, a new friend of mine. His name is William. William is in the Great Desert Southwest. He is a molecular biologist, so he's going to be tied for probably smartest person ever to be on the show. And just we could just sort of set his intelligence level, his IQ, probably twice of mine. So that's if you want to need a general range, that's what we're talking about. He is married with adult children. William, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, and I don't know that you'll think my intelligence is so high once we get into the story, but we'll have a chance for that.
That's where we draw the line between intelligence and common sense. Sometimes those two things are a little different. We'll see. I have not heard his whole story yet. He just gave me a general sort of outline in the email that he sent in. So folks, let's thank him for writing in. Once again, I wouldn't have a show without guests, so thank you, sir. So let's start with your sort of general upbringing. Did you grow up? Were you sort of steeped in self-defense, firearms, you know, any kind of martial arts, anything like that in your past as a young person?
I grew up around guns as a hunter. Went hunting with my father first time when I was 7. So I'm familiar with rifles and that sort of thing. And from age 6 until 12, I did judo. So I wouldn't say I'm steeped in self-defense hand-to-hand, but
certainly that's probably both on the firearm side and the martial arts side, that's more than the average person. So that's, we get, you know, we're trying to draw a baseline.
I will say later in life, when I met the woman who would become my wife and met her family, the first day I met her father, he took me out to the range and, we went shooting, I really enjoyed it. So I actually, purchased a handgun, when I could after that. And, he took me out and we shot at a organized, shooting events, IFSC, that kind of thing.
Nice.
I never got good with it. Always shot a 1911.
Okay.
And so I'm very familiar with guns. I did get a concealed carry permit in the state I was in at the time. And in the intervening years, I've lived in 2 other states and I've gotten carry permits there. So I've always had handguns around. So yeah, I would say I'm probably better than average as far as gun usage.
So let's talk about your professional career. I don't want to get into specifics about where you work or anything, but I am curious. Did you decide, say, in junior high or high school that molecular biology was something that interested you, or is it something you kind of fell into in college, or how did that work? Because I always wonder about this. You know, some people,
I wanted
to be a doctor when they were 5. So,
no, I was not there. I wanted to go into marine biology, but I have some problems with my inner ear. And so that wound up not being something that would work. So I looked around in the biology field and said, well, microbiology looked like a good field. So I did microbiology for a while. And I came in right at the time when everybody that did biology really had to learn molecular in early 90s or so. And so I kind of fell in love with that and eventually got my PhD in molecular biology.
So what sorts of things? First of all, do you have a favorite microbe that people would like to know? Do you have a favorite? I'm kidding.
Listeria. Listeria is my favorite.
Very good. Okay. there we go, folks. Now you know. You heard it here first. I guess my question would be, what sorts of things can one do with a degree in microbiology? What sorts of fields? Because I'm sure there's a pretty vast array of things you could do with that.
Yes. I mean, you see a lot of people going into med micro, so medical microbiology. There are people with microbiology degrees that go into brewing. That's really big. Mm-hmm. Obviously winemaking, anything that uses, yeast for fermenting. But you'll see them in the food industry, all of that. Molecular, there's also a wide range of fields you can go in. Almost any field of biology now has a molecular component. So if you have a background in that, you can work almost anywhere.
Very interesting. I just saw a short, like a PBS short on YouTube the other day about, I live in Tucson, Arizona, and there is, they have these sort of, how should I put this? These sort of standalone biological areas. They call it the Sky Islands out here in Tucson. So it's all these mountains that surround the desert floor. Desert floor here is at about 2,000 feet, 2,500 feet on average. And they have the Catalina Mountains, which goes up to over 9,000 feet. And they have these little environments sort of on top of these mountains that are totally separate from anything around them. And it fascinates me that you can get these wildlife that you don't see in Tucson proper. You don't even see them in the foothills. You see them above, 7,000 feet or 8,000 feet. And I'm like, how'd they get there? Right. Did they cross the desert floor at some point to get there? Were they dropped? This stuff's really interesting. So I think your job is probably pretty fascinating. So on to the topic at hand, your defensive incident. Now you characterize it as, I can't remember the word you use. I'll say boneheaded or something like that. What you did, I'm betting that's probably not entirely true, but we'll find out. So kind of walk us through what happened. When was it? What were you doing? And what alerted you to the fact that there was something wrong?
Yes, this happened the Thursday before New Year's. This past year. So end of December 2023.
Okay.
I had my youngest son home from college. My wife and I were at home, and we had a neighbor over at the house, and we were playing games after dinner. So we'd been, playing games for probably 2 hours or so, and the neighbor was ready to go home. So I walked her to her house, came back, and I came in, poured myself a drink, sat down on the couch, and about 10 minutes later, my wife said, "There's someone trying to get in the back door."
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, we had purchased Ring cameras and had placed them all around our home. We actually live in a very nice neighborhood, but nowadays, pretty much anywhere you live, you just don't know who's going to show up.
Right.
And so she pulled up the, I thought, maybe it was an animal. Maybe it was, I thought maybe it was the neighbor. I don't know why she would come to the back door. So I wasn't really thinking.
It's normally bias kicking in. That's what that is. And that's perfectly natural. Yeah.
So she pulled up the camera and we looked at it and it was definitely not the neighbor. It was an individual, probably mid-20s to late-20s, black clothing. I had a bunch of things on my back porch at the time. And so he was kind of weaving in and out of the table, chairs, a few other things out there. And it, definitely not anyone we knew.
Okay. That was my next question. So, not one of your other sons or someone you knew from church or whatever.
No, absolutely not. Knew it wasn't. These cameras are actually quite good. You can see some good detail. So, and here's the part that I think was probably not the smartest thing to do. And that was, I told my wife, call the police, and I went and got my gun.
Okay.
And so, and the reason I don't think, I mean, having the gun inside was probably not a problem, but, I then went outside and I was safe in the house. He wasn't going to get in. We have heavy kind of metal screen, not the kind of screen you can just cut through.
Right.
Screen doors. Security screen, right? Yeah. And over the front and back door. So I wasn't worried about him coming in and he'd have to break a window otherwise.
Right.
So I saw him, fiddling with the door and it was locked. And so I went, got my gun. Told my wife, call the police and tell them that, someone's trying to get into our house. And then I went out in the backyard. So, I opened the door, looked, I didn't see him. I did have the handgun unholstered. I keep it in a Kydex holster. Normally I have it on me, even at home, often I'll have it on me, but we had guests over. So, I had it tucked away.
Right.
And, so I pulled the firearm, opened the door and, kind of did, the whole slice in the pie thing where you're, kind of watching to see if you can see anybody outside.
Sure.
And then I yelled, I said, I'm coming out. You better let me see you. Or words to that effect.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, I went out and my door is about, the back door opens onto a porch, covered porch, that is probably about 10 foot wide. And when I went out and turned to the left, there's an access way to the front of the yard. And that's where he had come in because the other gate was locked.
And what's the lighting situation like? Are you able to see? Do you have a flashlight or is it bright enough that you can
see? Well, that's what's interesting. I do have a flashlight. I don't have it on the firearm, but I had a flashlight. But I didn't need it. The porch light was on. Hmm. He came and checked the back door with the porch light on, which is really odd to me, but he did. So,
as we like to say in law enforcement, we don't catch the smart ones. You know what I mean? So it helps. Yeah.
So he was not in sight. At this point, he had come from the side of the house, come onto the porch, tried the door, turned around, went back around the side of it. So I came out and I said, you know, you better let me see you. And so he came around and he came around where I could see him. And again, there were things in between. This is a table, a barbecue grill, some chairs. And so I came up, you know, had him on point. And I said, who are you and why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
He had his hands in his pocket at the time. So he took them out. And so I went to low ready and I moved out into the center of the yard where, you know, I could see better. I could see if there was someone else over there, that sort of thing.
Did that change your backstop at all in a good or bad way when you changed?
It did. The backstop was the house. When I my house is an L shape and the porch is in that sort of L area. So the house part of the house was the backstop when I first came out of the door and first saw him. When I moved out, I had a cinder block wall as my backstop for me and the cinder block wall for him as a backstop. Part of the neighbor's house was actually visible when I initially saw him. So I came around and had something on both sides of it, both behind me and behind him.
Okay.
So came around and, you know, he was mumbling. He was saying something about looking for his sister. And I said, man, your sister doesn't live here.
Right.
And
we wouldn't know. Trust me.
Right. But it was pretty clear that there he was having some sort of an issue. I don't know if he was drunk or if he had any drugs on board or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely was having a problem with speaking. And so I just said, you know, I sit right where you are, sit. And so he sat down on the ground and I said, keep your hands where I can see them. And I yelled back to my wife. I was probably 15 feet from the door that I'd come out. The door was still open. My wife was inside talking to the police. I told her, I said, let her know that I have one at gunpoint and that, you know, he seems to be listening to what I'm saying right now and seemed to have it under control. Apparently the police, when they got the call, dispatched the helicopter because started hearing a helicopter circle in the house.
Right.
My son later on looked up the FAA's site and figured out that it was, in fact, the local police helicopter, and it was circling a donut right over our house. So
they do, yeah.
Yeah. At that point, I would have been out in the yard. I had the gun at low ready. I didn't have it pointed at him at this point. I did want to say one thing. So I mentioned earlier that I had done competition shooting earlier in my youth and with a 1911. And I really like 1911, but that's not what I carry. And I'm glad it's not what I carry. I carry a Striker. I carry a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield.
Okay.
Now and in 9. And I'm glad, because when he first came around that corner, I started to take up that trigger. And that part of it is, yeah, because it's striker fired, it, you know, it's got some movement before it goes bang. Yeah, and that's the part of it.
Go ahead. No, that's fine. It was a little delay. It's no big deal. That's a great point, actually. And I'm glad you brought that up. That has actually not come up ever on the podcast before, but it's of interest. I have a friend who was in the Marine Corps. He and I were partners back in the 90s out in San Diego, and he was in the Marine Corps. He's an MP. And he recounts a really harrowing tale, although I can't get him on the podcast for some reason, a really harrowing tale of going to a domestic violence incident on a Marine Corps base, and about how he had somebody at gunpoint who was actively threatening his wife or girlfriend, I can't remember, with a knife, like had her like in a hostage position. And he had the old Beretta M9, that big hand cannon thing that they made it as big as possible and put as few rounds as possible. And I don't know how they did it. But he talked about unconsciously having taken up a lot of the slack in that trigger in preparation for, he didn't realize he was doing it in the moment, I guess is the point.
I didn't either. I didn't either.
And that's something I think should definitely be discussed. So I'm really glad you brought that up. So that's a great mental rep for the listeners and the viewers to think about, hey, you know, keep the finger all the way off the trigger until you've made a decision to shoot, because you would hate for this to have been, you know, someone with, you know, somebody on the spectrum who got lost and, you know, comes around the corner and you accidentally pull the trigger and now you've got a whole, you know, mess on your hands. So thank God that wasn't the case, but this is a great training point. Let me ask you, what was your impression after the initial shock of seeing this person come around the corner? You're sizing him up now. What is your impression of this person? Is this sort of an average looking person, or does he appear to have a mental issue? Does he appear to be more kind of gangbanger-ish, or what was your assessment in the moment?
Just on sight, he looked, I would say, younger. And because I saw him again later at a hearing related, as we can talk about that later too. But and he looked much older and more put together than he did when I saw him. He just looked kind of like a rumpled young guy that he after talking to him, it was clear that he was confused about several things and potentially was having other issues.
Right.
And so I would just say I didn't think he was a gangbanger. He wasn't wearing shoes. And that I found out later, that was odd. He had socks on, so I couldn't see he wasn't wearing shoes when I told him to sit, and he sat down. But you know, again, he just in his talking, he was really slow to respond, and he was slurring some, and he was trying to be precise in his words, but he wasn't, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you
trying.
Mean.
So, yeah. So once I kind of got him sat down, I was okay. We got this under control. Let's wait for the police to get here. I had my wife tell him, "Yeah, I've got him at gunpoint." Mm-hmm. He wasn't pointed at him, but it was at low ready. And just tell them to come around to this side of the house, and they can just open the gate. And
is there any instructions to give you, like unload the gun and disassemble it and put each part in a different room in the house or whatever? They kind of crazy stuff.
They didn't. They said the police were on the way, and just to, you know, remain where I was and don't, you know, take any action that wasn't absolutely necessary. And I said, you know, just if they want to. They come to the gate and want to come in, just tell them what they want me to do and I'll do it. Like if they want me to drop the gun, I'll drop it. If they want me to holster it, I'll holster it. Whatever they need, I'll take care of it.
And that's perfect, by the way.
And so I just sat there and the guy started talking about looking for his sister. And I said, you know, your sister doesn't live here. I've been here for a long time. Your sister has never lived here. Mm-hmm. And then he started talking about his phone. He wanted to get his phone. And I said, you know, don't worry about it. The police are on the way. They'll they'll hook you up with a phone if they need to. I want you just to stay where you are and keep your hands where I can see them. Mm-hmm. And again, I want to get my phone. Can I get my phone? No, don't do that. And then he started talking about, keep in mind this, the police responded very quickly,
right.
which I know on a lot of your podcasts, that's not what people say. They say either, like the last one said, they didn't respond. All I can say is that, they did respond. They responded very quickly. It didn't seem very quickly, but you know,
never does
in your head. But he pretty quickly started talking about, I don't want to be here. And I'm like, well, you can't go. The police are going to come and they're going to want to talk to you. So let's just don't move. Keep your hands where I can see them. And he said, I'm not going to stay here. Just go ahead and finish it. And that's when I started getting nervous again. So he started. Yeah. Now he never said, just shoot.
Did you take that to mean what it sounds like?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He never said, just go ahead and shoot me. But, he did say, finish it. And it was clear what he was talking about.
Sure.
And then he started, sorry.
That's okay.
Other phone. And then he started, shifting around a lot, moving his hands a lot. And, you know, I'm just like staying at low ready. I'm probably 10 feet away from him.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the ground leaning against the house. And so again, he's talking about, he's starting to shift around and move. And I'm like, don't move. I need you to keep your hands where I can see him. I need you to not move. And, fortunately at that point, I could see flashlights coming around
mm-hmm.
from the front of my house from the side. And so I yelled out to the officers. I said, hey, let me know what you want me to do. And they were fine with it. They knew I had a gun. They'd been told, my wife had told them. So they came around and, as soon as the flashlights were, I could tell, you know, about how far away they were.
Mm-hmm.
I just immediately took the gun and held it, you know, instead of like you would normally hold it. I just grabbed it like this and I set it down on a tabletop.
So for those only listening, he had purchase on the gun with his hand in such a way that it was demonstrating he wasn't going to shoot anything or anyone. He was
right.
Setting it down so that the officer
sort of, yeah,
that.
Grabbed it by the slide
yeah.
with my left hand. I had it in a two-handed stance,
mm-hmm.
Low ready, took my left hand off, grabbed it by the slide and set it down. And the police came around and, you know, they, very professional. They, you know, started talking to the gentleman. They got him up and they said, whose shoes are those in front of the garage?
Oh, and you knew the answer to that question.
And then I looked and he was not wearing shoes. I said, yeah, it must be his because they're not mine. And they had parked their cruiser probably three houses down the street. I could see the lights
text
going. And they, you know, they stood him up and patted him down and cuffed him and took him off to the cruiser. One of them took him off to the cruiser. There was a female officer and a male officer. The female officer introduced herself and, you know, asked my name and asked me if I was okay. And, said, you know, are you, you know, do you need me to do anything right now? And I said, no, I'm fine right now. And she said, well, why don't you go in the house? We're going to go take care of him. And then we'll come back and, you know, talk to you about it.
Okay.
And, so I went in and, waited around for about 10 minutes and I went, out the front door. I could see where they were, but I didn't go out to the street. I figured they had their hands full.
As a former officer and agent, thank you very much for not going out there and saying, hey guys, what's going on out here?
Yeah. And, again, they handle it very professionally. And so I just stayed in my house. Female officer came back and she gave me a business card for the male officer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically she said, yeah, we're going to be taking him to the hospital because he's making some comments that, you know, self-harming comments.
Right. Understood.
But she said, are you, you know, willing to press charges on this for criminal trespass? She didn't say criminal trespass. She just said, are you willing to press charges? I said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make sure this guy doesn't come back.
Sure.
And about a month later, mm-hmm. I got a subpoena for court. I went to court. I mean, it was remote. It was like this, and
Zoom call or something.
Yeah. And so I got on, and it was interesting. Of course, they had several cases on before us, but I'm sort of waiting. And the subpoena had the defendant's name on it, so I found out what his name was. Mm-hmm. And he came on the screen, actually, at one point. I saw him on the screen. And then the male officer, who was the primary on it, on the case, came on the screen, and I recognized him from that evening.
Sure.
And then the defendant's attorney came on, and the officer and the attorney went into a breakout room and apparently had a discussion about the defendant and what was going on. The male officer came back on and said the defense attorney would like to speak with you about her client and what's going on. Mm-hmm. And he said, you can do that or not. It's entirely up to you. And I said, sure. And basically what happened was the individual was not from the state that I'm in, actually. He doesn't live in the state.
Okay.
And he had some sort of a break, whether it was associated with, you know, drug or alcohol use or whatever, I don't know, but clearly he was altered. And she said, he's been getting medical help. And I would like to ask the court to put him on a diversion where he would not actually be charged with criminal trespass, but that he would be required to undergo medical treatment for the period of time that the diversion would last. He'd be required to report to, the police or maybe a probation, that equivalent.
Yeah, something like that. Do you happen to know, you may be privy to this, did he have any kind of criminal history prior to this? Because that makes a big difference in my mind as to whether or not diversion is appropriate.
I asked the officer, and he said that he had looked. He didn't have any felony convictions. He may have had some misdemeanors. To be honest, I don't really recall what he said specifically about it, but he did not have any felonies. And the misdemeanors were, you know, the same sort of thing, you know, trespass. I work sort of adjacent to law enforcement, I guess, and I do interact with individuals that have misdemeanor crimes that they may have a bunch of them or a few of them, and then eventually they graduate to a pretty severe felony.
That's usually how that works.
So I recognize that a misdemeanor conviction is not really necessarily okay, but this gentleman, I didn't speak to him, other than that evening,
right?
He didn't seem dangerous, and I know that's maybe naive to say that, but he seemed a little bit lost.
Let me stop you right there. I don't know if it's naive at all. I think most people, the average person, can kind of gauge more or less that sort of thing pretty effectively. And we don't give ourselves enough credit for it. Cops are usually better at it because that we're professionally, we have to assess people and their, you know, the danger level and various other things. It's part of our job. But no, I mean, if this has happened before and there was no malintent on the part of this young man, then yeah, it could just be literally just that he has this whatever mental issue it is. Maybe it's compounded with drugs or alcohol. I have no idea. I guess you don't know either. But if this person continues to do that, well, that's a problem, you know, just because he didn't intend on disturbing anyone, just because he was confused about where he was or whatever the case may be, it still did address the problem. So I think diversion is probably great. I would like to see something where that diversion is extended way longer than it usually gets now, because someone like that who has that problem, rarely can that be sort of cured, right? It's something where they have to, someone has to keep an eye on them, frankly. And I don't think arresting them and throwing them in prison is the answer either. The only thing putting somebody in the system does is make them a better criminal. If they had any intentions on criminality in the first place, you put a 14-year-old who's messing up into juvenile hall for 2 months and he comes out way worse, or she comes out way worse than they were. But that's just my two cents. So at the end of all of this, what ended up happening with him? Did he successfully complete the diversion, or we don't know yet because it's still ongoing?
We don't know. It's still ongoing. And I know that that the attorney wanted, I think, 90 days where he was monitored and had to take medication and interact with a healthcare professional and law enforcement to ensure that he didn't have an issue. I don't know what the judge finally gave. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I mean, if he shows up at the house again, I'll know.
Right.
But
usually whatever the prosecution and defense settle on, except for extreme circumstances, usually the judge will generally accept that. It's rarely in my 30 years that I see that, but maybe a couple times where the judge is like, no, this guy's a real piece of work. We're giving him more than, you know, the plea agreement called for.
Right. So
let's talk lessons. I think we all know where this is going. It would be better for you to have stayed in the house. So my advice to anyone in this position, right? Especially you got Ring surveillance cameras, you can keep an eye on him, on the problem outside. So obviously the best thing to do is to just stay inside, especially in your circumstance when you had the cameras and you had security doors. If he'd have broken a window, you would have heard it, but that's not what happened. So moving on from there, let's talk about how it was handled. I think it's really, really critical that you brought up the piece about the trigger pull and not even really being cognizant of the fact that you were depressing the trigger. There's not a lot more to be said about that other than, hey, listener and viewer, if this is you, understand this is a thing that can happen. So control that trigger finger. That's critical. I think everything else you did was fine. I think it was great. It was fortunate that this guy wasn't some insane, you know, as we say, prison fit, you know, escapee who's out to, you know, rape and pillage and plunder and murder people. He's just a confused young man because here's why. So if he'd have been out there in that exact same scenario, but the other person is not this confused young man, but a little sniper from 18th Street who, escaped a transport and is now desperately looking to change clothes, right? And we'll do whatever he has to do to stay on the lam. That guy will charge a regular person with a pistol, or even a cop. They will charge you with that. So then what do you do, right? That's the question. Say, now I'm standing here in my backyard, and this 6'3", 280-pound guy who's all muscle, and he has three teardrop tattoos under his right eye, is now charging at me. What's going to be going through your head is a lot of stuff. Can I pull the trigger right now? He doesn't appear to be armed, but if he gets to me, right, if he gets all the way over here, am I going to be able to retain my gun? Am I going to be able to fight back against this person? All those things are things that it's really better for you to have heard on a podcast and thought through in your head. So if you can go back other than staying inside, right, and just being on the phone with the police monitoring, what else? That's the obvious piece, right? What else might you have changed, if anything, or do you feel like it went as well as it could have gone?
Well, there are things that I'm glad I had in that circumstance, and there are things that I wish had not happened in that circumstance. So the things that I'm glad is that I had not modified the trigger on that Smith. I had thought about doing that, and because the shield, M&P shield, it's a good, small, it's a solid carry weapon. It's no HK, of course. But,
right, yeah. We have to say that, right?
Right. Yeah. I'll cash a check later. But the trigger pull on it is not terrible, but it's not great. And so I had been thinking about, you know, altering it, and I'm glad I didn't, because had I, it's entirely possible it may have gone bang.
Right.
That
would have been a bad day. So let's talk to the folks who don't know a lot about guns, what we mean when we say the trigger pull. Generally speaking, there's, unless you're a double single type gun. So if you like a 1911, like he was talking about earlier, that's the old school 45, like the 1911 A1, you know, that won two World Wars and all that kind of stuff. It's a single stack pistol. So it only has, it has single stack of ammunition in the magazine. It's a magazine fed pistol. And it has a very large projectile, larger than a 9mm or a 40 cal. And once you've got that thing out and the safety off, the trigger pull is instantaneous. So the minute you touch that trigger, basically put any pressure on it, it's going to discharge.
Right.
Versus a Glock, an HK, a Smith & Wesson pistol, or most modern striker-fired pistols, where there's no need to cock a hammer or anything, it's striker-fired. So there is a little bit of slack. And a lot of the modern pistols have a little extra piece in the trigger that gives you a little bit of leeway. And if you modify that, meaning you make the trigger pull shorter or more immediate, in this case, when he did that little bit of pressure on the trigger, it may have discharged. That would have made a difference. Then this young man we may not be talking about, you know, the confused young man who now is getting diversion to court, we'd be talking about a whole other thing that we don't ever want to have to deal with if we don't have to. So just to clarify that.
Right.
So what else about this do you feel went well or not well?
Well, when I went out the door, I had my finger on the trigger, and that is a big no-no, and I know better. But having never been in the circumstances before, I had not really thought through. That's not true. I had thought through what I would do if I ever needed to use the firearm in that way. But a lot of that kind of went out of my head at the time. And so I think again, had I just stayed inside, none of that would have been an issue.
Sure.
But I went outside. Had I had a modified handgun, that certainly could have become an issue, but it wasn't. I was familiar with the gun. I've practiced with that firearm a lot. I know where the trigger breaks on it, but in that circumstance, I didn't know where I was on the trigger.
Right.
Meaning I didn't know if I was, you know, 2 pounds from it going off, or if I was
3 ounces,
half a pound from it going off. So, yeah. So I'm glad that I was on a striker fired weapon at the time and not a single action like the Colt. But again, I think the best thing would have been keep the finger off the trigger, because when he came around the corner, it startled me. And that was part of why the pressure went on. And that is just the worst situation to be in. If you don't want to have an accidental discharge, it's just not the way to go.
The reason this show exists, frankly, is so that people can hear other people's stories and get that mental rep and learn a little bit of something from it. I do want to apologize for all the people whose dogs were triggered by William's ring notifications going off. They have barking dogs in their house right now. Thankfully, I'm on headphones. Otherwise, my dogs would be going absolutely bananas. They hear that ring thing, and it's quite literally a Pavlovian response. Oh, it's fine. We're almost done. Don't worry about it. I was just
Fine. Sorry about that.
I was messing with you. I think we got a number of good lessons here. Number one, I think really is obviously just if you can stay inside, stay inside. I know some people. They talk about, you know, what's my right to defend my property. And that's absolutely true. A lot of things are true. It's your right to do a lot of things. It doesn't make them a great idea, you know? So
right.
Staying inside would have been better. William acknowledges that. In fact, he acknowledged it before he even told me the story. But you know, if you find yourself in this position, watch your trigger finger very carefully. Hopefully have an optic on your gun. As John says, don't be gun Amish, get an optic. And that way you don't have to have that super front sight focus, and you can kind of keep a better eye on your target by using that dot instead of that super duper specific front sight focus, which can cause you to not be able to see what's going on down range. Other than that, I think you touched on the stuff that I would have asked about, like, hey, you know, did when the police got there, what did you do? How, you know, did they tell you what to do with the gun or not? And sometimes I've had people on who were like, they told me to put the gun away in a drawer and, you know, go hide in the bathroom and turn the fan on and play Led Zeppelin. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing any of that stuff.
Right.
Remember, that's up to you in that moment, but it behooves you to try to coordinate with the police if you're holding a gun, just to make sure you don't get accidentally shot by the police, which would be a bad day. William, I can't thank you enough for writing in. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I think people will get a lot out of this. So I really appreciate your time. Was there anything you wanted to add before we part ways? I don't want to leave anything out.
I don't think so. Other than even, I mean, I've carried for years. I'm actually a little older than you, Mike. And I've had a gun on my hip since probably age 21. Mm-hmm. And it's something I've thought about a lot. Would I be able to do it? Could I do it? I think I could. I didn't need to in this case, thank goodness. And even with the practice in my head, even with practicing with the firearm, even with, you know, what would I do if this happened? I still made mistakes. So it, you can never think about it. I'm not suggesting think about it all the time, but you
right.
think about it a lot. If you're going to carry a gun, think about what could happen a lot. And this actually caused me some stress afterwards. You know, went inside, of course, the adrenaline dump after that, I was pretty shaky for a while. And I thought a lot about what would have happened if I pulled that trigger accidentally. And, you know, I've got it sorted out now, but, and I'm glad it didn't happen, but I don't know where I would be if I had accidentally shot that person. So,
well, you know,
think about that.
Like we say all the time. Yeah. Think about this stuff for real. That's a great point. When I say have that conversation, it doesn't mean you have a conversation only one time and then you're done. You're good to go. Check in with right. yourself. Your life circumstances might've changed in such a way. Maybe you didn't have kids when you first started thinking about this and now you do. That could affect your judgment. Right. That could affect how you look at another human life or value another human life. These things do change and they do change over time. So that's great advice. William, I think this was a fantastic interview. I can't thank you enough. And, you know, keep in touch. If I'm ever in your area or you're in mine, let's get a coffee or something. I'd love to meet you in person.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity.
Take care.